take a public health policy geek and buy him $1 billion of political independence, and you get Michael Bloomberg. Long before becoming mayor, Bloomberg donated hundreds of millions of dollars to public health research. As WNYC's Fred Mogul reports in the latest installment of New York Remade, since taking office, Bloomberg has been uniquely positioned to take experts' advice, turn it into law, and change how millions of New Yorkers live their lives.
On the November day in 2001 that Michael Bloomberg was elected, two things were in the New York City air, literally and figuratively. The World Trade Center still smoldered and wouldn't be fully extinguished for another month. Tobacco smoke still swirled around the city's bars, restaurants, and other public spaces. Those two fumes came together as Dr. Alfred Sommer from Johns Hopkins University led Mayor-elect Bloomberg's search for a health commissioner. Sommer interviewed Dr. Thomas Frieden for the job. And unlike other candidates, Frieden didn't want to talk about bioterrorism. He told Sommer,
"Tobacco. Tobacco's the big thing." I said, Tom, have you heard about 9/11? And he said, "Oh, yeah, sure. And that's an issue that we have to deal with. But I guarantee that tobacco use is going to kill far more New Yorkers than bioterrorism ever will."
Bloomberg bought it. He hired Frieden to crusade against tobacco, raise the stature of the health department, and increase its focus on chronic health problems like diabetes, obesity, and heart disease. Bloomberg quickly raised taxes on cigarettes and proposed banning all smoking in restaurants and bars. At a hearing in late 2002, Bloomberg told the city council,
"The question before us is straightforward. Does your desire to smoke anywhere at any time trump the right of others to breathe clean air in the workplace?"
It was one of the few times Bloomberg ever testified on behalf of a bill. There were some protests, but the smoking ban passed by an overwhelming margin in the city council. Resentment festered.
That Bloomberg, I was so angry at him. If he was in the same room, I could have choked him.
That's 60-year-old Elizabeth Lane of Harlem.
"I thought he was a dictator. I said, is this right? Can he really tell people what to do and how to do it?"
Lane smoked for 40 years and tried many times to quit. In the end, it wasn't so much the smoking ban that got to her as the shocking ads featuring amputees, and especially the high tobacco taxes. At $12 a pack, Lane was dropping hundreds of dollars a month on cigarettes,
which I couldn't afford. I had to beg, borrow, and steal to get money to buy cigarettes.
Finally, Lane says, family pressure and a lot of prayer moved her to dig out an old nicotine patch she'd gotten years earlier from a city-state giveaway program. And it worked.
"I don't, when I'm walking, you know, that's improved. And I can walk upstairs, that's improved. And I don't cough, that's improved."
Quitting smoking has indefinitely postponed surgery to open her blood vessels and reduced her risk of cancer, stroke, and heart disease, potentially saving taxpayers tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. And quitting smoking has also changed Lane's mind about Mayor Bloomberg.
"He knew what he was doing. He did the right thing. And I'm thankful to him now."
Curtailing smoking has been Bloomberg's signature public health achievement. Other areas around the world have followed New York's lead, and local polls suggest the smoking ban remains hugely popular in the city. But the dramatic success on smoking has been difficult to replicate. On more widespread and complicated problems, progress has been more incremental, when there's been progress at all. Consider the city's most extensive and sustained public health campaign.
"Obesity is a very bad thing."
Over the past 8 years, the Bloomberg administration has banned trans fats, required food establishments to post calories, encouraged green markets and produce carts, and started the country's first large-scale registry of individual diabetics. There's been some improvement among school children.
"Overall obesity rates in K through 8, children ages 5 through 14, declined by 5.5% over the past 5 years.
But among adults, diabetes and obesity have increased. The initiative that garnered the most attention by far was attempting to limit the size of sodas and other sugary beverages.
"Compared to smoking, this is an easy battle to win, and nobody's going to stop this, is my impression."
Not exactly. Bloomberg clearly touched a nerve. The mayor and his aides tried to argue that people could buy as much soda as they wanted, that the new rule would just reset the default size, forcing people to think a little bit before gulping down hundreds of calories. But opponents quickly got the label soda ban to stick, and they got help from the food industry.
So are we going to let the mayor tell us what size beverage to buy? If we let him get away with this, where will it end?
6 out of 10 New Yorkers opposed Bloomberg's sugary beverage initiative, according to a New York Times survey. 2 state courts so far have rejected the rule, not because the mayor couldn't create such a law, but because he tried to do so by bypassing the city council. Bloomberg biographer Joyce Pernick says the backlash might have had as much to do with Bloomberg fatigue as anything.
It was the third term, and here he was doing it again. So beyond the opposition of the beverage industry and beyond the concept of don't you tell me what to do with my body, I also think that it was enough already. You've done this too many times. I'm getting sick of you, and I'm getting sick of your policies. Leave me alone.
Another court appeal is pending. Republican Joe Loda has said he would drop the case. But Democrat Bill de Blasio has said on this issue, he supports Bloomberg. For WNYC, I'm Fred Mogul.